Session number 10403, Reel 1.
Mr. Harold Sell, Reel 1. Could you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Sell?
Well, I was born in London. I really emanated from the North Country. And, of course, I returned there. And then, eventually, my parents settled in Gosforth, Northumberland.
What was the actual date of your birth?
In 6th of June, 1910.
What did you lived in Gosforth. What did your father do there for a living?
My father was a structural engineer. My mother, of course, was the housewife of the family, as it was in those days, and didn't go out to work. The family had, you can call a military background, because my forebears all served in the services. And my mother's maiden name was Powell, and was a niece of Baden Powell. So that all through my life, I had an impelling towards the services.
Did you know anything about this, your ancestors' military involvement? Did you know what they'd done and who they'd served with?
I did in later life, I've been about 10 or 11 or something like that. My father used to describe where the various theatres of war that they had fought and served.
What about your sort of conditions of living? Did you have a servant in the house? What sort of house did you have?
Yes, I suppose in those days you can say it was reasonably comfortably off, middle class family. We had a servant living in, and I went to the a private school in Newcastle. And during my period at the private school, of course, I took part in the activities of all the sports and in the Officer Training Corps. And
so what was the private school called?
It was called the Newcastle Modern School. It was run by a Dr. Early, who I believe was a German professor.
When did you go there?
I went there in the early 20s.
So before we move on to then, let's have a look. How did the war, what impact did that have on you? It started in 1914. You'd be very young then, about four. When did you first become aware of the war and what it was doing?
Oh, well, of course, I knew when war broke out because of all the activities that took place in the household. We had soldiers billeted upon us. And, of course, my family were always talking about the war and living with soldiers. I sort of followed their way of life, and I was aware, although I commenced at the age of four, I used to accompany my parents to various events that took place, so that I was aware and was, as a boy, interested in what was going on around me.
The soldiers billeted with you. What did your parents provide for them?
Well, they provided the bed, and they cooked their meals for them. The rations were produced, and my mother and myself cooked their meals.
How did you get on with the soldiers?
Very well indeed. In fact, I think I was taken on as their mascot, as one always does with small children and soldiers. And I used to collect all their cap badges, and they taught me how to all the parts of a rifle, and they showed me how to take a Lewis gun to pieces, and they told me the bits of a Vickers machine gun, and they taught me all the slogans that they have in field class, so that really I grew up with an army background.
What battalions in particular were billeted with you, or are there too many to remember?
I think I can remember some of the West Kents. I think that was about the only one I can remember. But they were billeted with us and didn't stay for a long time. They stayed, I suppose, for several weeks whilst they went through their training before going to France.
You mentioned that they taught you how you know, how to take the rifle to bits and to strip a Lewis and such thing. Did your parents mind you getting involved in that sort of thing?
Not at all. You see, it was all part of our home life. Every time a soldier came in, he dropped his kit and he dropped his rifle. And as a small boy, what would I do but to go and get a hold of the rifle and see if I could take the bolt off?
You mentioned they taught you rhymes, and you did mention one to me earlier. Do you remember any of them still?
Yes, I remember, and I remembered it so well that I've often put it into practice. It was the rhyme that they had for taking up a defensive position. And it went something like this. First you clear your field of fire, then dig your excavation, reel out your defensive wire, then link up for communication. And all these rhymes which went on, and also for their all the rules that they had for aiming, of taking a 6 o'clock aim, and why you did it, and the rounds for wind, all became part of a daily patter which was going on all around me all the time.
How did the soldiers fit in with the local community, do you think, besides your parents and yourself? Were they popular locally?
Oh, they were very popular because they used to have, all the people used to have concerts for them. They used to do all sorts of things. They used to mend their socks. And I remember my mother taking the sewing machine out and stitching up some of their shirts. It really was an integral communal event.
Was there any friction with them being from the south and you being the north? I'm thinking of the Kent.
Not really. We thought that they talked in a funny way, but they did the same. And we used to laugh at each other.
How about the war's other effects? Were you aware of rationing?
Oh, yes. I knew there was rationing. And I remember powdered milk was introduced. And I remember my mother saying that she would have to bake some bread and put ground potatoes in it because there was not sufficient flour.
Did it affect your standard of living severely as a middle-class family, do you think, or were you able to?
I think we did very well. I, looking back and from what I hear, I did not go short in any way, but I'm certain that my parents sacrificed an awful lot so that my brother and myself did not go short of anything.
I believe you once went to see a Zeppelin. Do you remember that?
Yes. When there was an air raid, of course, we all used to go out and look in the sky to see the AK-AK guns going up. And just off the Tyne, they hit an airship, and I saw this thing coming down in flames. And this, of course, to a schoolboy or boy, a very small boy, was a great event.
Do you remember what happened?
No, I mean, all I can remember is that I saw this Zeppelin, and suddenly there was a very small ball of flame appeared inside, and it got bigger and bigger and bigger, and then suddenly the whole thing went up in a big flame.
And you saw it coming down?
We saw it coming down in varying burning bits.
Whereabouts was it falling up? Which area was it?
Well, it was off the Tyne, somewhere off the Tyne. We were living at Whitley Bay then, and it was off the Tyne.
When did you move to Whitley Bay?
Well, we came back there after we'd been in the south, and after I was born, we went to Whitley Bay. I think it was before moving to Gosforth. We had this, or my father had got this house, I think, at Whitley Bay, and then the war came whilst we were still living there, and then virtually the war took over our household.
Now, what age were you when you went to school then, at the Newcastle Modern School?
I suppose I would be probably 8 or 9.
So around about 1918, 1919?
Yes, that sort of thing. It wasn't very long after the war.
It was after the war had finished then?
Right after the war was finished, you see.
Do you remember the armistice celebrations?
Yes, the armistice celebrations, of course, were characterised by what they called peace teas. And whole communities turned out, baked stupendous meals, and took all their furniture and put them in the middle of the street. And everybody tanked up and fed and danced around and banged drums and decorated the street. They were events of the day.
Had you started attending the Boy Scouts at this time? When did you start them?
Well, I really started after we moved out. We just not shortly after the war, we moved to Gosforth. And I was in the local church, of course. Was put in the choir there. And then, of course, we became part of the Wolf Cubs, then the Boy Scouts, the 33rd Newcastle Troop, I remember. That was my introduction to it. But it was really a family, almost a family requirement that I did join a communal organisation.
Why was that?
I think it was because of the family history, and it was passed on to me, and I've never lost the feeling for it, as that was of communal or national service, or service to the community. And that I was always brought up that in whatever sphere I happened to be, I had to do something for the service in the community.
And the Scouts, with the family link to the Scouts, that was seen as being...
Oh, this was it. It gave my mother great pleasure when I was in the Scouts. And she used to talk to me about Baden-Powell, of course, who I never knew. But she used to tell me all about all what he did for the Boy Scouts, and I jolly well had to be a Boy Scout.
What activities did you do with the Scouts? What was their program?
Well, we used to do a lot of what we called hiking with a trek cart, and taking our food and cooking it by the roadside, and going out for camping and staying out odd nights and things for what they used to call character development, self-sufficiency and all this. But it really was. It was a very good thing.
How was that? How was it meant to develop your character? Can you explain that aspect of it a little more for us?
Well, I think the character training was, in fact, that not only were you made to be self-reliant, but you had to muck in with the rest of the troop, and you had to take your shares of everything, whether you peeled the potatoes, or whether you lit the fire, or whatever you did. It was your duty, and you had to take part in it.
And how often would you go on these treks?
Oh, about once a month or so in the summer.
Did you go for any longer camping periods?
Probably a week would probably be the longest with the Boy Scouts.
And what different... Would there be any special activities at that summer camp?
Well, they went... we used to do things like what they call woodcraft and trekking and lighting fires and preparing food and preparing your bed for the night and finding suitable camping sites and how to keep yourself warm when it was cold and generally doing housekeeping for yourself.
What about at the Scout Hut, where you normally met? What would they do on a normal, during the winter when you couldn't go out? What activities would you be doing with the Scouts then?
Well, then we used to... we used to do knots, rope knots, and then we used to do the Morse code, I remember, was a thing we had to do. Then we did semaphore, and then we made a canoe out of skin. It was all small handicraft stuff which boys were capable of and liked doing.
Was there any drill of any nature that you had to do?
You mean of the army fashion? Not really. We used to form up and stand in line, but it was very informal. It was individual. The emphasis was training the individual as a member of a community.
What proportion? So you wouldn't say it was training people to prepare for military things. It was just training an individual to prepare for the.
Not at all. It was preparing small or young people to be self-reliant and to be handy, to be able to turn themselves to the best advantage for themselves and for others in the community.
Now, although that the intention wasn't military then, how much of what you were taught of relevance later on when you did join the army?
On active service and also before the war, and when I used to go out on training, I found it of an inestimable value.
Was it accurate information you'd been
told? It was accurate because for the simple reason it was so simple and so practical. One of the things that for having two pairs of socks and one pair of socks always dry, and when you stopped at night you took the old pairs of socks off and you put the other pair on, and if they were not in good condition then you repaired them or you washed them and you dried them. It was care and maintenance was one of the things, which of course is so essential in military life, that you look after your clothing and yourself.
Who were the instructors?
Well, we had a scoutmaster, a chap called Singleton. He, I think, had been away. He'd been a rover scout and he'd been through the school, which was run for training of scouts. And we had several people who came in. Ex-RN people came in and gave us one or two courses on knots and semaphore and these things. They imported people to come in to add the extra interest, so that they were people who came in with the knowledge and we looked to them with mouths open.
What about the boys? What backgrounds did they come from? All backgrounds?
Or? All backgrounds. Every background. And they, there was no fear or favour about anybody who was in any social class. Those are the sons of unemployed and those of the, you might say, more affluent, all came together, and there was certainly never any question of what did your father do or any class distinction.
How many boys were there in the troop?
We had 48 altogether.
And was there any sub-organisation into, besides the troop or whatever?
Well, there was 48, and we were in what they call patrols of about 8 or 9 or 10, and you call one the peewee patrol, and you had a different coloured ribbon on to a chap who was called the partridge patrol, and he had something else. That was all subdivided down for competitive persons.
The competitive side.
Yes.
What was the competitive side?
Well, the competitive side was, you see, that you would go out for the weekend and you would do a bit of trekking or map reading. They started a bit of map reading, and the competition side was that those who sort of finished at the end or whatever the competition was, you got an extra piece of chip or something. There was always a bit of chocolate or something at the end of it.
You went on to the Rover Scouts. How
Yes.
are they different?
Well, they were the same except that they were more developed. They went out on longer. They did things tougher. They did heavier work, and they did subjects which were more advanced. But the same background of communal service and service community was all the way through.
So what year? How old would you be when you joined the Rovers?
Oh, I suppose I'd be in my 13, 14, that sort of age, I suppose.
So when you were at the public school, the Newcastle Modern, that's when you'd have joined those?
Yes, when I was at school, yes. And that, of course, was at the when I joined those, and at the end of that sort of thing, you were more sophisticated, and that's when I first came connected with the Army, you see.
Now, let's have a look at
with the OTC at school.
Have a look at the Newcastle Modern School. How big a school was it?
We had about 100 or 100 or 120 pupils, that sort of size.
And what ages did it cover?
Well, it covered people from about, I suppose it would be about 7 or 8 years of age, I'd say 6 or 7, because I was very junior when I first went there, up till school leaving age, until we had up to our matriculation standard, you see, that was the range of it.
And was it all day boys? Or?
No, there were boarders, and those of us who lived nearby, we went by day. But then we had to take part in the same curriculum. I mean, we had to do stop behind and do prep and all this business.
What was the curriculum? Roughly?
Well, roughly the curriculum was, of course, they had the maths as we know it and geometry, and then they had languages. Latin was compulsory. You could either take French or German. I took French, and then we did history. And, of course, we had, of course, in those days, what I suppose frowned on today, what they call religious training. We had the local padre who used to come in every morning and take prayers before we started work. And then every Friday afternoon, the same chap came and gave us, I suppose they were moral stories taken from the scriptures, but we always had this training.
Was your progression through the forms based on age or based on your progress in your lessons?
Well, on both, really. I mean, it was no good putting a fellow into an X form if he was completely useless. He got lost behind. It was not kind to him. But by and large, you were jockeyed along. If you weren't so good in a subject, you would stay behind and the master would take you for special prep.
What about sports? How important was sport at the school?
Sport was very important because we had a sports master who was always stressing the importance of what he called, they were sports of groups, group sports. All again stressing the self-reliance of the individual devoted to the benefit of the whole team. And we always had team sports for that reason. Cricket, rugby. Boxing was done a bit, and then of course then we were led into the cadets, which were at the school.
When did you? How were the officers' training course? How were they organised in the school? Was it compulsory?
No, it was not compulsory. It was an option, and it was merely. We had carbines and we had sort of a loose uniform, and we did drill and we did small field craft. But, I think that what they did take on a bit further was such things as map reading and compass reading and things of that nature.
What level of drill did you do, though? I mean, what sort? How far? Did
well,
you...
what I, you might say that it would be equivalent to almost platoon drill. That was about it.
And how often would you practice it?
Probably, we'd be at it about twice a week. That would be about it. And then, of course, there was a camp. Well, there was always something of that going.
From what age was all this?
I suppose just at the time when I was, after about the time I was a Rover Scout. And I was doing both for quite a time. And then I think I was still doing the Rover Scouting as well as that when I joined the Fusiliers, when I first went in there. But the whole thing was a progression, you see, right from my earliest days, it was progression.
The OTC, were you a private, or did you get any higher in the
OTC? No, I was just one of the boys in there, you see, I was a young lad. And
did they have ranks at all?
Well, they had Lance Corporals, but they had attached from the local drill hall. They had what we were in the latter we called a PSI instructor, and he was the fellow who came along, and then we would all march down to the drill hall and go through the gymnasium there, and he would explain parts of a rifle and parts of things and things like that. That was the setup.
Did you get much rifle practice, rifle shooting?
No, once or twice we were on a .22. They had a .22 range, and we were encouraged to do that. No, it wasn't as if it was a
were you keen on
high
that?
Degree. Yes, I was quite keen on rifle shooting. I think we all were at that age. It went bang and it hit something at the other end, and that was marvellous.
What about any sort of tactical training? Was that on your summer camp?
Yes, they used to do all, like section, just field formations, arrow formation and file and Indian file and things like that. Very elementary. You couldn't call it military training. It was an extension of the scouting. If you see, it was a more formalised form of scouting.
As you came to the end of your time at the school, round about into 1926, what did you think you were going to do? What did you have any ideas for a career, or how did you decide to do what you eventually did?
Well, of course, in those days, everything was in the middle of the Depression. And my father's views were, and the family views were, that I should get my matriculations and then go and into some profession and take the institute exams. this was the idea, and eventually they knew somebody, or I knew somebody, or somebody, and I then was taken on by the Royal Insurance Group in Newcastle, and I was with them, and the moment I joined them, and I came under the command of a chap called Harry Robinson, and he was the boss in my the particular department, and he made it clear it was a condition of service that I joined the local TA unit, as it was a condition of service that one must join. So I joined the...
Is this an official condition of service or a local thing? That
well, one never knows, but all I know is that the company not only encouraged it, they gave you all your time off you wanted to go to the regular depot, and they also gave you time off as extra on top of your annual holidays. It was rigorously encouraged.
Before we go on to your actual joining the territorials, what was your job with the Royal Insurance Group? What did you actually have to do, your daily living?
Well, my daily living, of course, that I was just going around in the departments from one department to another, learning the rudiments, and then getting ready for their exams. And then I went into the fire department, then I went into the accident department, then into the accident claims department, then I did surveying, and it was a gradual progression.
Did you enjoy the work?
I did. I enjoyed it to the extent that I knew I had to make a success of it, and it was a jolly good job, and it was a first-class firm. On the other hand, when you're young, you know, your mind always turns to activities, football and other activities, so that your loyalties. But I will say here and now that had it not been for the Royal Insurance Company when I came back after the war, and they did give me a job, I don't know what would have happened, because...
We'll come to that at the time. What you mentioned football and cricket. You were just a 16-year-old lad or so,
yes,
when you left. Were you still... Did you have an active interest in organised sport at the time?
Oh, yes. I played for the school teams, of course. And at the same time, I was playing for one of the junior teams at Gosforth Nomads. You know, it was always a big interest.
So how did you go about? You've been told you had to join the territorials. Your background seems to indicate that you had no objection to it.
Yes.
Would you have joined if they hadn't suggested it to you, do you think?
Well, if I hadn't joined the Territorial Army, I would have joined some form of national service, because I had been all through my life taught that I had an obligation to the country, to be in something.
How did you go about joining then?
Well, that was very, very simple. I was told where to go, and they rang up the adjutant of the particular unit and said I'd present myself. So I went up there and put on the biggest boots I could find, and went up and just said, I've come to join.
Where did you go, Fenham Barracks?
No, I went to St George's Drill Hall in Newcastle, which was then the 5th Fusiliers. They were then just the Northumberland Fusiliers. And, of course, they were still mostly ex-World War men in charge there. So I suppose they took one look at my feet and said, you're in.
Was there any sort of interview or health check, you know, a medical...
Oh, yes, there was a medical check. There was an interview.
What sort of topics was it dwelling on?
Well, they wanted to know my background. They wanted to know nationality, and they were very keen on that. And they wanted to know what sports and things I took out. And they were very interested, because they had what they called an officer training company. And I suppose they must have probed pretty deeply in questions. And I was put into that particular section.